$50, and there are only 100 tickets for this VIP event. Secure your tickets to the Jazz Happy Hour.
Tickets are available at Eventbrite. When in Eventbrite, please search WPFW Tacoma Station. We're looking forward to celebrating you on Sunday, May 26th from 5 until 9 p.m. at Tacoma Station.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going to walk the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
What'd I do?
Turn around.
Put your hands behind your back.
Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on. Get
that. I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. I was just talking to my wife. We've been here for 16 years, bringing you this show, Reverse Aspects of the Criminal Justice System. My name is Roach Brown, and my wife's name is Mertine, and we are overjoyed that you allow us to come into your homes on your radio and whatever to listen to what we have to share. Thank you. As usual, we open up at what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Hey. First of all, I just want to say that a good friend of ours is in the hospital, Al Malik Farrakhan of Ceasefire Don't Smoke, the brothers and sisters. Please keep him in your prayer. We went up to see him a couple of days ago, my wife and I, and believe me, it's like going into a circus. Folks are coming from everywhere to come in to see him. Even the guard at the front desk said, man, he must got a lot of love. Folk love that turkey. So please keep Al Malik Farrakhan in your prayers. We understand he's on the bounce. He's bouncing back. So there's no need everybody rushing up it. But if you want to, hey, just let him know and keep him in your prayers that this brother put in a lot of work for a lot of people for a lot of years. And we need him and we can't lose him. So keep Al Malik Farrakhan of Ceasefire Don't Smoke, the brothers and the sisters, in your prayers. Hang in there, soldier. We got your back. Now we get to the grapevine. The graying of Americans' prisons. In the first of its kind project, contributors chronicle the now ubiquitous experience of growing old behind bars. Prison makes an awful elderly care facility, yet more prisons are rapidly becoming just that. Thanks in a large part to longer prison sentences and decreasing rates of parole, the number of incarcerated people 55 and older has climbed from 48,000 to 154,000 over the last two decades. Dorothy Jones from California mediates on homesickness and the profound loneliness that attends aging in prison. To properly explain to families and friends how badly I need emails, letters, and phone calls, I would have to describe how it feels to be trapped in this tiny room with nothing but memories. Statistics show that recidivism rates decrease dramatically as a person ages. Recidivism rates drop to 2% for people between the ages of 50 and 65 and drop to virtually zero for people older than 65. But many people in these age cohorts will not get another opportunity to live outside the walls of the prison. Governor Murphy backs jury service for those with felony convictions. Governor Phil Murphy announced his support Wednesday for legislation that will restore jury service rights to New Jerseyans with felony convictions. These individuals who are being denied the right to perform a fundamental civic duty are predominantly Black and Latino, and all of us are being denied the opportunity to be judged by a jury of our peers, the governor said. Let me be clear. This is not justice. It is wrong, plain and simple. Expanding the vote, state felon disenfranchisement reform. Since 1996, 26 states in the District of Columbia have expanded voting rights to people living with felony convictions. As a result, over 2 million Americans have regained their right to vote. As a result, over 4.6 million Americans with a felony conviction were disenfranchised as of 2022, disproportionately impacted Black and Latino votes. Thank you. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. And now joining us this morning for the first hour, this is our two-hour show. We normally come to you from Ben's Chili Bowl. We're not there this morning. We'll be back next month at Ben's Chili Bowl. Our first hour is, where are we with COVID? Lessons learned from Black survival. And our guest is none other than the famous Dr. Reed Tuxton, co-founder of the Black Coalition Against COVID and former commissioner of public health for Washington, D.C. under the Marion Barry administration, I believe. And man, thank you for joining us this morning, Dr. Reed Tuxton. Are you there, Dr. Tuxton?
I'm always here and ready for you, my brother, and your audience. So thank you for having me.
I didn't even have to ask. I knew you was there, Reed. I could see around the corner, man. How you doing, Dr. Tuxton?
I'm feeling good, brother. I'm, continuing to live that undying love for Black people and continuing to be totally preoccupied on our health and our survival. So I'm doing great.
You've been our guest a couple of times, particularly during the COVID, and you was the only person who would call and bring us up to date on what's going on with COVID locally and nationally. And you worked like a dog on it. I knew you was a former commissioner of public health for Marion Barry, and you still are functioning in that capacity. And without you, we wouldn't have been able to uncover and explore the impact of this COVID on not only the Black and the Latino community, but also for those men and women incarcerated. And I want to thank you for coming in town, because I know, man, you are one busy rascal. And you, go ahead, Doc. You, is something you want to say in terms of, wait, before we do that, we're joined by our co-host, Nikechi Taifa, our distinguished co-host. And we're lucky to have her, because she's like you, Doc. She's all over the country, all around the world. Every time we turn around, Nikechi is somewhere. Good morning, Nikechi Taifa.
Good morning, Roach Brown and Dr. Tuxton. Always glad to be on with y'all this morning.
And we're glad to have you. So what's the status now, Doc? Everybody thought that the COVID was dying. We had licked it. It's out of the way. Give us an update on what's going on with the COVID in our Black communities, please.
Well, I will do that. Let me, before I tell you where we are now, though, let me remind your audience of where we've been. You will recall when we went through the last pandemic, there were a lot of people who were concerned about the vaccines. There were a lot of people that were promulgating all kinds of things about how, you know, if you took the vaccine, it was going to interfere with your chromosomes, or you're going to grow a third ear and all that kind of craziness. let me just remind us of what happened. You know, I am very much driven by the words of the great Calvin Rolock, who taught me when I was coming up that no people but a people can save a people. The Black community organized itself so well against this pandemic the last time that for the first time in history, we closed a health disparities gap. The number of Black folks, despite all the obstacles we faced, all the hassles we went through, we closed the gap between the people, the populations, the white population and their vaccination against the COVID. We equal them. But what's more important, and this is the issue, Black life survival in the second year of the pandemic, when that COVID vaccine was out and we took care of our business, our life expectancy was better than white America. We beat them. And the reason, of course, was because Black community groups, faith-based physicians, health professionals, nurses, we organized ourselves so effectively, while simultaneously the white politicians, the Trumps and all those people who were spreading all that false information, they killed their own people. They killed their own people, Roach. And this is the thing we got to remember. So where we are now is this virus continues to stay with us. It will be in with us for years and years to come. We have not been able to eradicate it. And so the virus is continuing to change, to what we call mutate. It is still causing deaths around the country, but hospitalizations and deaths are way down compared to where we were this time last year. There is a new variant called KP2, which has now defeated its other variant rivals. There's, you know, several different kinds of formulations of this virus that are hanging around. But now this KP2 has evolved to be the winner. And so we are seeing now over the last couple of weeks, this new form of COVID coming back. And we can't predict yet how serious it's going to be, Roach. We know that it is going to be, that it has strengths over the other variants. And so it is spreading. But we don't know yet how serious it's going to be. So we're going to have to be very much on alert for this summer. And the last thing I'll say, and then let you get your questions in, but what we really have to prepare for, in addition to watching to see what's going to happen this summer, is getting ready for the fall. Because we need to, as a community, be ready, have ourselves organized so that we can make sure we get enough people vaccinated for whatever strain is there when we come to the fall, that we can make sure that we continue to survive as people and not have this thing take us out. Remember that when we were finishing the pandemic last year, it cost over, 100 million people. So there's a lot of people that were, a million people that were dying, and there's no way that should have been the case. So we got to get ready.
You know, you just said something that surprised me. You said that people are still dying from COVID. We don't hear it on television. We don't see it on the news. I thought the COVID situation was resolved, taken care of. Now you're telling us that this COVID is coming back, and it's even coming back in a more debt, and people are still dying from COVID, and we haven't heard nothing on the news. What's going on?
Well, the reason is because the rates are so much lower than they were before. And so because it's been dwindling over the last couple of months, it's really been dwindling very low. So the reason why you're not hearing about it is because we're moving on to other things in the society, and because it's not as big a threat. What we are now watching, Roach, and what we have to be careful about is what's going to happen with the new variant, and to see whether or not it's going to be more, as dangerous as the variants that we fought against last time around. We just don't know yet. So we're watching it very carefully.
You know, we looked on the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties website, and they got an article said that 3 years later, COVID-19 is still a threat to people who are incarcerated. And it was predicted that COVID-19 pandemic is not over, especially not for people who are incarcerated. And the ACLU, one of our clients, predicted early on that serious illnesses and death would strike people in the year. And you suggested the same thing when we came on almost 18 months ago, Doc.
Roach, the thing that I'm sure you saw it in your audience because they're so aware, but just in case somebody didn't see it, there was a landmark study that was done that then the Marshall Project took that data and analyzed it. And as you know, Roach, 3.5 times more death rate in the prisons from COVID than in the general population.
We saw that report. I saw that report. You're right. Yeah.
And then as you mentioned in your setup with your update report, the number of seniors in the jails are increasing. And we know from that report that the people that were at most risk of dying in the prison were the seniors, the older ones. And so the criminal justice system has done a terrible job of protecting our incarcerated brothers and sisters from this disease.
Yeah, because you say prison people in prison died 3.4 times the rate of the free population. And the elders are hit the hardest. What is the medical community doing? Because I know the medical services inside of prisoners are dismal or abject, not even non-existent at virtually. What is it that families or men and women inside institutions or the medical field can do to get on top of this piece? Because this COVID ain't no joke. It's coming back down the pipe.
The main thing we need to do first, as we always do and continue to do, is to be very vocal advocates. And that we have to keep telling the story. I think this data that the Marshall Project has done is a ready-made set of tools. The second thing we have to do is that for those people who are on the outside, they'll have to be very astute at studying and analyzing what health experts say about the next round of vaccines. So we're waiting for the vaccines to be developed. And then for the next phase, trying to make sure that they accommodate the new variants so that they will be effective. When we get the data on effectiveness, and if that data shows that the next series of COVID vaccines are safe and effective, then we're going to need to have those who are outside spreading that information to those who are inside, so that when there is a decision to be made about whether to be vaccinated and you're a prisoner, then you will have a chance to take the vaccine. When we did our national TV show, radio show, Roach, with you and others from the advocacy community, what we learned there was that a lot of the times, the most important person who determines whether people who are incarcerated will take the vaccine or not is mama, who is outside. And so it's family support. So families are going to need to be very, very aware of the data and the guidance. And if there is guidance and data that suggests that we ought to have people who are incarcerated take the vaccine when offered, they need to push that message through, because those brothers and sisters aren't going to get the same information that we will be getting on the outside.
You know, it said during the first year of the pandemic, over 6,000 incarcerated people died in the first year. And the virus hit older generations especially hard. What can those guys, and you just said it, the mothers, wives, sisters, and girlfriends, we know men normally or traditionally don't like going to the doctors or taking shots. But you just said something that need to be maximized, that mothers and wives need to encourage their loved ones incarcerated to take these shots, because that's a breeding ground for this pandemic in these closed environments like this. Go ahead, Doc.
No, that's exactly right. I was just sort of saying and thinking that it's the worst possible situation to be in, because what you have are being, as you say, closed environments, poor ventilation, poor medical care, and then restricted access to these vaccines. Because, you know, again, let's face it, a lot of the prison guards in our populations are people who come from are right wing kind of people. People who themselves don't believe in it, and who definitely don't believe in saving Black folks' lives from preventable disease. Yeah. So there's a lot of obstacles to overcome. We got to have to push through that. And we also then, people like me and other advocates, are going to have to push to make sure that there is ready availability and access to the vaccines once developed in that environment. So we have to not only convince our folks to take it, we also have to work hard to make sure they have access to it.
You know, we have a unique situation here in Washington, D.C., and that when they closed the local prison, they sent all of our prisoners to the Bureau of Prisons, to federal prisons all across the country. And by doing that, our folk have lost contact with their loved ones, and et cetera. And you know that if you're close to your loved ones, you have a chance of being out free or getting a visit. And the less trouble you cause, the more privilege supposedly you can have. The thing is that what happens, I mean, let me say this. I remember some of the horror stories from that when this COVID first hit, that men were using their underwear and T-shirts and socks as masks because the prison didn't have sufficient masks to give them. And now we're going back to this same thing all over again. They don't have any support mechanisms inside. Besides getting a shot or to counter this, or there's no mask, there's no supportive materials that these men and women can use inside the prison to prevent from catching COVID. And I'm wondering now, is this the same situation is going to repeat itself over and over again? These men are using their dirty underwear, T-shirts, and socks as masks to keep from catching the COVID. Now here COVID is coming back for the second time for a double punch. And I'm afraid and scared of what's going to happen to our population. Now they're only in there because a lot of these guys get it. And when they get released, some of them are coming out of prison with COVID. and without any mask, and he wasn't even diagnosed with it, and they're spreading this. So,
and here's the other thing, Roach, to keep in mind, and there's two points that I think that come out of what you just said. First is, let's also remember that so many of our folks in prison have their own chronic health problems that make them more susceptible to bad outcomes when they, if they do get the virus. You know, we have a lot of the folks in the prisons are not being treated well for their chronic diseases. And we know that when you are already sick and already have issues, it makes it doubly more important to make sure that you are, you know, wearing a mask and so forth to protect yourself. But then you make the extremely important point is that when you come home, we come home to families who have chronic health problems, seniors, you know, citizens who many people when they return home, you know, live with people who are older or people who have illnesses. And so we can make them become ill. So for all of that. But what I'm going to do, Roach, is I have a meeting coming up with the White House in the next couple of weeks. And one of the talking points that I'm making, one of the points I'm making to advocate for them is that, first of all, I'm going to remind them of the success that we had, that, you know, these people need to know that when people give money to Black community organizations and Black health advocacy organizations, that we're not just pissing that money away. We proved already we can save Black folks' lives when we get ourselves organized and fight for our life. But we've also got to now make sure that we put the incarcerated community and the returning citizens community higher on the list of preparation and higher on the list for resources. So I'm going to be carrying your message, Roach, into the to my meeting with the White House.
You know what? Go ahead, Mark.
You know, and Dr. Tuckson, what's really ironic is that the prison system policy is that they're supposed to, they're entitled to the best health care, and they're getting none.
You know, Martine, and again, I come back to, you know, what Roach says, when Roach reminds us that our folks are sent all over the country, but where these prisons are located are in these rural areas so often, in these small places, which are primarily Trump County, right-wing Republican counties. So the workforce in these prisons comes from the very place it's the worst possible workforce kind of attitudes around this disease or health in general. So you're right. We have a real advocacy push to fight for.
You know, it's something I wanted to share with you, Dr. Tubman. The Supreme Court ruled that the only people in America who's entitled to health care are prisoners, the incarcerated inmates. That's a right that was afforded by the Supreme Court. And yet, I mentioned earlier that D.C. is in a unique position because they closed the prisons, our local prisons, our men are sent all around the country. So that means we're in the custody of the Bureau of Prison. Last week or a few weeks ago, the city council passed legislation saying that men from D.C. are entitled to educational services while they're incarcerated in the BOP, which is their right by being confined at Lorton or in the Department of Corrections. But now that takes it to another whole level. What right do we have that the D.C. government and the medical community can request or enforce or recommend that we have a mandatory right legislated or ruled by the Supreme Court that prisoners are the only people in society who have a right to proper free medical care? And because we're from D.C. and the city council is still making statements about our D.C. prisoners in federal custody, they are in position to request proper medical treatment or care, et cetera, for our D.C. co-prisoners. Is that something that can be requested from the office of the public health commissioner or the city council?
I think that what we definitely need to have is a relationship between the guidance and scientific expertise about what needs to be done, what the fundamental requirements are to be able to be healthy. They need to be in lockstep informing the city council and the political people for the advocacy. And so, Roach, you will be in a meeting with me and the new health commissioner of DC tomorrow. And I am hoping that you will make this point tomorrow to our health commissioner and urging, and she's, I think, a very good person, and I really have confidence in Dr. Bennett. And I think that what you should, I'm sure you will take that opportunity on behalf of your listening audience, that you will be advocating and saying to her, let's work more closely together with the political leadership as we fight to make sure that our kids, our family members are well protected, wherever they may be in the country.
Oh, we'll be in the Go ahead, Nikichi.
Go on, Boach.
Go ahead, Nikichi. Go ahead.
Okay, so Dr. Tuckson, what I hear a whole lot about now with respect to COVID is the impact of long COVID. I'm hearing from a lot of people who had COVID in terms of some of the things that they are experiencing now that they're characterizing as long COVID, and it sounds really devastating. So I'm just curious, can you speak to that, the impact of long COVID? And I don't know if that's another exasperation in terms of our returning citizen population who might have had COVID inside the prisons and the types of things people are experiencing now with respect to after impacts.
Well, this is exceedingly important. When we think about protecting ourselves from COVID, a lot of times, Martine, the conversation is about, and importantly, about not dying. But we do know that this is a very serious syndrome called long COVID. What this disease does is it attacks, in large part, the blood vessels of the body. And it attacks those blood vessels all over the place so that it affects many different organ systems, many different things, whether it's our brain, our hearts, our breathing, all of these areas can be affected in one way or the other. And they do, and they can last for a very long time. So we really do need to make sure that we don't get it as much as we can try to limit it or limit its damage by having ourselves vaccinated so that we give ourselves the best chance not to have this thing called long COVID. Okay. And the last thing I'll say, Martine, is that the way in which people experience this disease over time is, again, extremely variable. So you'll have so it becomes very difficult for the medical system to always be able to sort of diagnose what's going on, because the format of long COVID is so variable and so individual. But it is a serious thing, Martine. We need to be aware of it. And we need to make sure that when we get COVID, we have access to good doctors. We need to be able to have a doc who can follow us after the illness to make sure that we're catching any problems that are lingering in anywhere in the body.
Yeah, and that last question, that was Nikichi, not Martine. That's Martine coming on there. Boach only
I'm sorry, Nikichi, my bad. Please forgive me, my sister.
Not a problem.
No problem. But you know what's interesting to me is a lot of my friends and some family members who, I'm not going to say they're pro-Black, but, you know, their whole thing is, I'm not taking that white man's vaccine. And they've been fine. So what do you say
to
that?
Some people may have gotten through it. They were lucky. They may be because they had low-grade disease that gave them a chance to build up antibodies. But if you want to go ahead and try to say you don't want to take the white man's poison, then, you know, join the white man as more people die than Black people. I mean, I've never wanted to be on the team that was losing. So let's just say that, you know, folks, say, I'm not going to take that medicine. I'm going to show you. I'm just going to go ahead and let us die more often than anybody else. We'll show those white folks by dying. Again, I want to remind people, for the first time in history, because Black folks took the vaccine and the numbers that we did, our survival was better. You hear what I'm saying? We lived, more of us survived this disease than white people. And so while the white politicians, while Trump and his people and the conservative right-wing crazy people all across the country, they were telling their people not to get vaccinated. Just like some of our Black folks saying, I don't want to take the white man's poison. Well, guess what? Because the white politicians did such a good job telling their people not to take it, and because we did such a good job in taking it, we survived better than they did. So these people who are saying, I'm not going to want to take the white man's poison and so forth, either you love black people or you don't. Either you are a person who is going to fight for black life and you're going to educate yourself about the facts and listen to and query the facts. It's okay to have questions. I love it when people have questions. But at the end of the day, if we keep going back to that same old craziness of the past and don't use the tools available to save our lives now, we're working hand in glove with white folks. I've never seen anything like it, Martine, where people willingly join white people to kill black people. It makes no sense.
Okay, we have a couple of callers on. Folk who are listening to the show want to participate in this discussion. We'll take our first caller. You're on the air, please.
This is Rick calling you long distance from Germany, man.
Boy, let me say this. I want to thank you for calling. You hear that, Reed? He calls all the way from Germany almost every month. Thank you, man. And we need you. Come on, Rick, with your question or comment.
My comment is to the good doctor. I am a conspiracy theorist. Tuberculosis runs in my family, and a strange form of tuberculosis, not tuberculosis of the lungs, but tuberculosis of the body, the bone, the brain, and the spine. And this form of tuberculosis was fed to Americans, Black Americans, Native Americans, the few that they could get to trust in medical services in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. My mother had this strange form of tuberculosis, and she passed it on to me. I'm a conspiracy theorist, Doc, but I took the vaccine here in Germany because I don't live alone, and I had to respect the fears and the requests of my family members who I share housing with, and a couple of seniors at that. I have to be honest, even though I'm a conspiracy theorist, I'm not dead from the vaccine. I'm still alive. So even though I think black doctors are afraid to talk about bioweapons engineering, Dr. Fauci and his refusal to call HIV and AIDS a bioengineered weapon, even though I'm a conspiracy theorist, I've had a good experience with this vaccine. That's my comment.
Okay, thank you.
Rick, let me just say that you put a lot out there for us, but the main message that you put out there is I think very important. And I think what I hear you saying, and I think we all need to sort of say it, is that no matter what the issues are in our society, we will have many different perspectives, points of view, and takes on it to be analyzing. But when it comes to you right now on something that you can do that will ethically and morally responsibly take care of your obligations to your family and the people that you live around and with, then all of a sudden the rhetoric and all the conjecture goes out the window when death is the consequence of failure. So we can debate conspiracy theories and we can debate all those things, but when it comes down to the rubber meeting the road and you can do something to save our lives, then we can act on that and continue to argue and disagree or explore the other things. I finally want to just make sure real quickly that while I certainly understand where you are coming from on the conspiracy side with tuberculosis, you know, I just want to say that, you know, we have to be a little bit careful about, you know, making sure that we understand or saying that we can actually prove some of these things that we're concerned about. But I'm not really going to focus on that. I want to focus on what I think is a brilliant perspective that you've given us. We may disagree on a lot of different things, but when it comes to the one things, or the very few things that are clear life and death opportunities, let's don't play around with that, and we can discuss the other things offline.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, this is WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. The telephone number is 202 202-588-0893. You've got a couple of calls, and we're continuing this fabulous conversation.
We'll take our next caller on. Doc, this is the second or third time we had you on the show dealing with this COVID thing, and it dawned on me, what is it that we can do to prevent from catching it? Because my wife and I caught COVID on December the 19th at a rally we had in front of the mayor's office, and we both went into the hospital on December the 19th from COVID. What is it that we can do, who are listening, to prevent us from catching it, or how can we give information to our loved ones incarcerated, in particular out of them youth? Because we're talking about COVID, but it's impacting our youth just as severe. Okay, we let the doctor respond, then we go back to the phones.
Very quickly, the first and most important thing really is to make sure that we are all consistent with being updated on our vaccine status. So follow the recommendations for vaccines. We should have a new vaccine that will be available, in the next couple of months. And so we have to make sure that we're organizing ourselves and be prepared to take it. Secondly, we are experiencing COVID now in combination with two other diseases. And that's what's going to happen again in the fall. It's going to be the flu. It's going to be something called respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, which is another airborne respiratory viral infection, and then COVID. So we are experiencing all three at the same time. And that's probably what's going to happen as we go forward. So what that means is that if you are ill and you're really feeling bad, you need to make sure that you are tested, testing yourself to see whether it is COVID or one of these other ones. And also, if you are feeling ill and bad, please do not go walking around other people. You know, it's like saying, well, I'm sick, but I'm a warrior. And so I'm going to go ahead and go to work and sneeze and cough on everybody and show you all that I'm a dedicated worker. I'm so dedicated, I'm going to kill everybody around me. So you have to do that, and then wear your mask when you are around. If you're feeling ill, if you have any symptoms of a respiratory illness, you wear your mask if you're going to be around grandma and grandpa and anyone who's immunocompromised, whose immune system is weak because of some other disease. Those are the fundamental and basic things. Of course, always we remind you, you know, wash your hands, you know, like just common sense intelligence. So if we wash our hands, you know, don't expose people that we, you know, when we're unsure, get ourselves tested when we are ill, and then make sure that your vaccine status is up to date. And by the way, the last thing I'll say is your vaccine status is important for you, but it's important for everybody because we live amongst ourselves very much. You know, a lot of times Black folks' lives are very much around other Black folk. And so what we want to do is get this thing. We want to have a whole army of people who are well immunized so that we can stop the spread. It's like if you have a fire and you build a fire with logs, take the logs off, the fire goes down.
Yeah. You know, Doc, what's amazing to me, we're talking about COVID, and all over the country, they're passing laws in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, everywhere to punish careers because of the crime rate and the carjacking and the shootings and the killings. And there's been a couple of folks here locally, politicians, who are demanding increased punishment, penalties, and prosecutions for our youth. And nobody is using the same approach with COVID. When COVID hit, right away they went into the lab and the research clinics, and they got experimenting, and they found, where did COVID come from? Why ain't that same practice being used for our kids when they break the law, get locked up, and they say, we're going to punish them? What caused that? What are some of the leading factors surrounding these kids getting involved in this? So why would you use punishment? It's just like if everybody got COVID, get locked up and get thrown into jail. We don't care where you got it from. You got 15 years and you shouldn't have done it. That's how we are approaching, or not we, they are approaching this crime situation. And again, these youngsters are out. It's like,
we can do all.
Go ahead, Doc. You got it.
No, man. I'm just somebody that's making noise behind me. But here's what I think is really important, Roach. It's even what you said needs to be even bigger. Realize now that our young people are in the worst situation they have ever been in. The number of kids I'm hearing now in DC who are not even in school, like half of them are not in school every day. Everywhere you go in this country now, every state is rolling back all diversity, inclusion, you know, programs, anything to do with affirmative action.
Banning black books, et cetera.
Man, and so my point is, and then I just got back from Korea, South Korea, Roach, and when I was over there, I saw a government that is hell-bent on educating its population around science, engineering, technology. It's devoting tons of money into training young people to be on the cutting edge of innovative manufacturing, technology, and science. We in the United States don't do anything like that. In fact, Trump is talking about he's going to get into office. He's going to abolish the Department of Education. We got black folk who think that they're going to opt out of the election because they may or may like something about Biden. Regardless of whether you like everything or with Biden, the one thing you cannot possibly imagine would be a government run by Trump next time around, where he will dismantle everything. So my point is, man, that I look at the news now, and the news in black world is filled with Drake having an argument with Cole, having an argument with Kendrick Lamar. I mean, man, we occupy our time with the silliest, stupidest things. Meanwhile, our lives are at stake. Our kids are going to jail. We don't have an education system that works. The kids aren't in school. And we're rolling back every DEI program in every state in the country. And we arguing about what some rap artist is arguing with another one about. Man, we don't have time for this.
Dang. Boy, you said it. You said a mouthful. Keep your doc, we always say that's jiggy boogie. Yeah. We got more important things to be concerned about our life, economy, and all this kind of stuff. And they're worried about who saved what and who shot. That's just jiggy boogie. We'll take our next caller. We got three callers on the line. First caller, please. Question or comment for Dr. Reed Tuxton?
Comment?
Come on with it.
Hi, I'm a lactation consultant, perinatal educator, and nurse in the community. And I want to thank you very much for hosting the program, Mr. Brown, and your esteemed family, and Ms. Nkechi Taifa, and our activist physician, Dr. Reed Tuxton. Thank you very much for addressing the physical medical issues, the mental health issues, and the social health issues of our community for generations. And what I just wanted to speak quickly about is an appreciation for also addressing the fact that there are generations that are impacted by disease process, transmission, and also by incarceration. And it's very important for women in the community to understand how important providing their own milk for their infants is when it's medically possible. And also that DC Jail, in fact, has a breastfeeding policy, and we support women in the jails to express their milk and provide it for their infants when someone is available to retrieve it and get it to the babies, and how important human milk for human infants is in helping to prevent many transmissible diseases and others that are not necessarily transmissible. And then speaking about playing into somebody else's hands, the pharmaceutical industry are by and large owners of the baby milk or formula industries, and they stand to make lots and lots of money as we suffer as a result of not providing passive immunity to our children and other ways that immunity can take place. For women when they're pregnant to become...
Excuse me, do you have a question for Dr. Reed? Do you have a question?
I want to thank you and ask you, what else do you think that we can do who work in community health?
There you go. Okay, you hear that, Doc?
I love it. Yeah, and I really appreciate it. Let me just, first of all, her comment stands on its own. It was fact-based and important.
Yes,
she indicates how vital it is for Black mothers to be able to breastfeed their child. We know from the scientific facts that that does more than just provide nutrition. It also provides important, you know, antibodies and other elements that help fight disease and help build up the child's immune system. But there's something else that I just want to vamp on real quickly, and it comes back to the point, Roach, you and I were just discussing, and that is this. We know from zillions of scientific studies that the bonding that occurs, that the bonding that needs to occur between mother and child in the first year of life, and the way in which in the first couple of years of life, we spend reading to our kids, talking to our kids, engaging with them, exposing them to our voices and to words, helping them to start reading early. All of these things are absolutely critical for the child's future success. And so I would just urge us all, every parent that is out there now, if you are not regularly reading to your infant child, your young child, your developing child, your three-year-old child, you know, your four-year-old child, if you are not actively every day reading, talking with them, engaging with them, with their brains, then we are letting those kids down. And after 5, 6, 7, it's much more difficult for that child to overcome that loss. So please, okay. I'm begging everybody, take the time and talk and read and engage your kids. Stop, turn off the daggone radio and all this crazy music and spend time with a book with your kids.
Okay, we have 4 or 5 more calls on. We'll try to get them before we get off the air. Can you keep your question or comment brief, and we'll go right to our next caller? You're on the air, please. Question or comment?
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. This is Nate Morris speaking.
Hey, Nate.
Yes, yes, good morning. Thank you, Dr. Tuckson. I appreciate you bringing up awareness to our communities. My question is, since RSV and COVID are similar in nature, why is it that the awareness of the RSV seems to be almost non-existent?
Yeah, what a great question. A great question. And what we, I'll be real fast with, given Roach wants us to move fast, but I would tell you that the reason is that this is a fairly new idea that most of us don't really know much about it. And so it also, RSV doesn't have the same lethality of COVID. And I think the reason why it hasn't been emphasized as much is because while it can certainly cause you to have some issues, it isn't as much of a deadly virus. And it also, as COVID is, and that's probably why. But now you will notice this year, there will be a lot more education about RSV and flu as we talk about COVID. That we'll talk about all three of those a lot more in the same breath.
Okay, we'll take our next caller. Question or comment, please. Thanks, Nate, for calling in. Next caller.
Am I on the line?
Come on, you're on air.
Okay, thank you very much for taking my call. I would like to disagree with with a good deal of what the doctor is saying. It will take me a couple of minutes to get it out, and I just hope that you will please hear me. I am white. I'm a longtime activist. I'm not an anti-vaxxer Trumper. I'm a WPFW supporter. I have 2 doctors at Howard University, for thyroid medicine, endocrinologist, and then my colonoscopies I get there. That doctor, my enterologist, they are both Ethiopian American, and they were they don't like the vaccine at all. They had to get it as a condition of their employment. I have 2 friends who are vaccine researchers, PhD researchers. They have extreme concerns, and at the risk of their jobs, they, like many healthcare professionals, have come out against this. I'd like to point out that it is true that African Americans, when they get COVID, have worse outcomes. That, however, has to do with weathering and with, because of racism, much poorer access than to healthcare and good nutrition. The United States is not keeping statistics on death from COVID in the last few years. In Europe, they are. And they their statistics show that there has been a 20% increase in death among Europeans who are vaccinated across the board. And it's not from COVID. It is from the damage that is done to the immune system by this particular kind of vaccine, which is based on the RNA in your system. And what most vaccines do, you put a little bit, a weakened version of the virus in the system, and the system creates its own antibodies.
Okay, well, let me say this in the interest of time.
Please.
In the interest of time.
One more thing. This vaccine puts the antibody itself into your system, and because it's based in your genetic reproductive, has that component, it can mutate in your system in an uncontrollable way and actually weaken the system's ability to creatively develop its own antibodies against whatever is incoming. And I'm not against all vaccines, but I can't tell you, the statistics here are like 40% of all doctors think this is a terrible idea.
No, that's just not true. And hold on a minute.
Okay. I have done the research myself.
We don't have but a few minutes.
Go ahead, Doc.
We only have a few minutes. I don't have enough time, unfortunately, to debate every one of your points, but it is simply not true that 40% of American doctors are against the vaccine. That is so far from reality. I will also tell you that at Howard University, that first of all, I created something called the Black Coalition Against COVID. That is the four Black medical schools, Howard, Meharry, Morehouse, and Drew, the National Black Medical Association, the National Black Nurses Association, all of them together were completely on board of how important it was for us to get vaccinated. So you may have one or two doctors at Howard who have whatever opinion they have, but the overwhelming sentiment on behalf of all of our Black academic health scientists and leaders is in support of this. The other things you said about whether or not, you know, how the vaccines work. I don't have time to help you to better understand why what you said is not true, but I just have to say we will have to just end it with disagreeing. And the last thing I would say to you is this: what we do know is that out of that more than a million people that died, if we had had the proper levels of vaccination uptake, we would have saved 300,000 of those lives. So I don't mind arguing about, you know, different sort of points of view. And I think it's important to have these respectful dialogues, and they have to be formed where we can go back and have the time to debate it. But one thing I have a hard time with, and I'm sorry that I kind of cut you off there because we were running out of time, is to leave it out there that somehow or another, what you are saying ought to then discourage Black folks from getting the vaccine. I, as a person who cares about whether we live or die, and I have had to be the person, when I was health commissioner in D.C., I kept the statistics of life and death. I'm the one that had to go to the, who supervised the morgue, and I would see those Black dead bodies. For me, this is not just a rhetorical argument where people can just say whatever they want to say. If it means that we're going to die as a result, I got a problem with that. So I think we have to make sure that when we go out and we talk to people, we know what we're saying. And especially if you're going to take responsibility to make a point of view that affects the life and death of other people, you really got to make sure you know what you're saying.
Thank you. I think you're handling that excellent, Doctor. I want to thank you. We won't be able to get to our rest of our callers. We got 2 minutes before we go. Doc, you want to get some closing remarks and let folks know how they can reach you and about that meeting tomorrow and what we're trying to do?
I would just simply say that that it matters whether we live or die. And I believe that Black lives matter. But if Black lives matter, and they do, they have to matter to us first. And so let's make sure. So even as we end our conversation, even when we disagree with each other, we will have to have forums where we have enough time to listen. I would finally urge everyone, if you have questions, go to your doctor, go to your public health department and ask. It is good to have questions. Nobody wants to stop questions. We want you to have questions. And we want to give you the answers. And let's find a way to have common ground, even for those that we don't agree with. But the last thing, like we had our brother from Germany said, he is a conspiracy person. But at the end of the day, he knew that he had a moral responsibility not to sicken and kill the people around him. That's what I think we have to get to, even if we don't agree with each other.
So that's your closing remarks. Is there a number how folk can reach you if they need to follow up? And to our caller who we disagree with, I like the way you said it. In fact, we all got the right to disagree and share your opinion. And we'll try to get on top of that for the next.
If they send an email through you all at the station, you know how to get it to me.
I'll forward it to you, Doc. You want to give us a closing number or email how they can reach you if they need to reach you? If you want everybody
to contact. Hard for me to respond directly, so it better let them do it through you. So I don't want to disappoint somebody because I'm just one person.
If you want to reach Dr. Reed Tuckson, you can call me or send it to or tell it to the hat. If you tell it to the hat, I'll get it. Remember that our time is out. I want to thank you. Stay tuned for the next hour. This is our 2-hour show. We got another show coming up in 1 hour dealing with cannabis and a returning citizen. Thank you. This is Roach Brown, Mertine, and everybody here and Nikichi. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
That's when I learned the lesson that it's all about your perceptions. Hey, are you a papa or a superstar? So you act, so you feel, so you are. It ain't about the size of your car. It's about the size of the faith in your heart. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that.
My Body, My Festival is a 3-day, 3-night abortion access music festival happening May 16th to the 18th. Presented by DC Abortion Fund and Burger Sounds, My Body, My Festival will take place at local venues across DC, including Pie Shop, Songbird, and Metro Bar. Featuring acclaimed local artists across genres, including Deborah Bond, Sneaks, Amy Bormet, Verge, Alex Hamburger, Akua Ulrich, and more. My Body, My Festival is a celebration of our city and abortion access in support of abortion seekers living in or traveling to the DC area. Tickets and more information can be found at mybodymyfestival.com. WPFW, Radio for the Resistance.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW Studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW Washington.
Inspired by Holly Near's Send In 1,000 Grandmothers, Raging Grannies and Code Pink are bringing grandmothers and those who love us to the U.S. Capitol Thursday and Friday, May 9th and 10th, to lobby and hold our legislators accountable. In order to nourish our courage, there will be a free concert Thursday night at 7 p.m. at the Washington City Church of the Brethren, 337 North Carolina Avenue Southeast, featuring Emma's Revolution, DC Labor Chorus, Songrise, Black Workers Center Chorus, Colleen Cattell, Annie Hassett, and of course the Raging Grannies. This song fest of peace and justice music will inspire and encourage us to keep on keeping on as we invoke the true purpose of Mother's Day to call for peace. All are welcome to join both days. For details, visit codepink.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Sophie's Parlor is the original women's radio collective. Wednesdays from 3 to 5 p.m., the best music divas on radio at 89.3 FM and sophiesparlor.blogspot.com.
the best in live music entertainment is coming this spring to Bethesda Theater. On Mother's Day, it's Howard Hewitt performing his own popular songs and those by Shalimar. But two shows on Sunday, May 12th at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. Trouble Funk featuring Big Tony on May 3rd and Howard Hewitt on Mother's Day, May 12th. Get more information on all shows at BethesdaTheater.com. WPFW is a proud media partner with